checking out my man Specific on the ones and twos, getting ready to turn all the way up. So let's go, homie, let's get it.
Yo, what's the science, y'all? This is Oxygen, the digger extraordinaire. Sometimes I rhyme slow, sometimes I rhyme quick. Sometimes I even get on the wheels and DJ a little bit. But right now, I'm checking out my mellow, my man, my dude, Specific.
Hey yo, this is Phil Most Chill, and you are now tuned in to the sounds of Specific on the ones and twos, rocking your mind one time. Check it out.
Yes! Good evening and welcome to another Cold Crush Radio Show, live and direct on a Friday night, 8:30 thrill to 10 o'clock, with me, Specific. Tonight I've got a very special guest in the studio. It goes by the name of Junk, from the incredible Second to None crew. Also got a few brand new exclusive tracks to play you. Hold tight for that.
Sitting comfortably? Good. Then we shall begin.
You've had some slack, now your daddy's back. I'm Jackie Chat and I'm happy I'm back in my natural habitat. I brought you some of the Aggie rap for all of my scallywags and alley cats. You look at them laughing at my manner of man, I ain't having that, man. Show me the sick of the rappers, you know. They watch me cure them all. They told you they're wicked and bad and brave now. Them lots adorable. They don't wanna kick it with Jackie, they don't. It's not plausible. Muggy little druggy rap mummy boys, I'm bored of you. I will show love to the real while I reassure them all. I'm here, I'm doing my bit still, trying to keep it honorable. While I wreck my scene, while I wreck my time, while I raise a family now. When I make them see, when I make them proud, you understand me now. On steady feet, I dare compete with any, each and all of you. Jack, Jack, that rap, you know the name, and this is audible.
It's audible one, man.
No, it's audible one now. You should have said before instead of all of them drum sounds.
I thought I did somehow.
Ah, it's cool, this is fun now. These rappers is gassed up, you can call me, they come down. They knew I'd come round, dark and always let sundown. Their videos you posted up before, they look dumb now. Win it. You should have come with bars instead of gimmicks. I'm clinically cynical, call me the king of the cynics. I'm keeping it lyrical, you could have done with doing the same. Oh, you're feeling silly now, and I'm the one who you're looking to blame. That's a shame. Look, this is my face, and that's my name. Feel free to come at me, but come correct, don't be sorry you came. They say we're too dope for detox, bringing you classics like Reeboks. It's Jack Jack with the bars, or the one with the big box. Big box, big box, big box, big box.
That was the sounds of Jackie Chat and Audible One. Now straight into something new from Man Dejar One.
Cold Crush Radio. I remember when I debilitate. Enemies run up, suffocating with the pillowcase. Vegetation on my dinner plate on dinner dates. Genitalia bang it out like a J. Dilettante. Ultra instinct, power to the maximum. Negotiating record deals for hours at the Vatican. At the Square Garden, Madison, what's happening? From the street straight to the presidential cabinet. I'm that passionate, years later cashing in. Best of luck trying to catch up to us. Ashes to dust from the back of the bus. The platinum plus laying in the back of the cut. Yup, uranium rap, your cranium's cracked. You're paying this, we got the stadiums packed. You know the name, right? Poe the legend and the weaponry is heavy handed. Blast dealing heavy damage. Another casualty. From the cradle to the grave. 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 From the cradle to the grave.
From the cradle to the grave. From the cradle to the grave.
From the cradle to the grave. From the cradle to the grave.
Yo. My tide course flaming when I fire thoughts. I'm just a nerf link connected to the highest source. They want to steal the culture, firms want to buy us off. Facebook, Amazon, Apple, and the Microsoft. This ain't a gimmick, talk the same when the mic is off. After shows, grabbing big titties that are nice and soft. Recording songs I can license off. Money green, revenue streams I can siphon off. Puff a nice cigar, kick my feet back like a billionaire. Riding Teslas through Africa, they don't build them there. Silverback, gorilla hair, jungle psyche, light speed, should never run up on a Pisces. Blacklisted on your list, still invited. Still only spitting that shit, fuck how you feel about it. I been ruled, send a jewel before the finish move. These suckers couldn't walk a mile up in my tennis shoes. From the cradle to the grave. From the cradle to the
grave.
From the cradle to the
grave.
From the cradle to the
grave.
From the cradle to the
grave.
From the cradle to the
grave. The cradle to the grave.
From the cradle to the
grave.
From the cradle to the
grave.
Yes, indeed.
From the cradle.
Heavy new business by Deja One. I think I'm going
to
play the flip later on in the show. Trust me, that's a banger as well. Forthcoming on 7-inch.
The cradle to the grave.
From the cradle to the grave. From the cradle to the grave.
And of course, on heavy rotation all week, on everyone's turntables, is the brand new DJ Format 7-inch. I'm sure a lot of you have copped that, and if you haven't, I think you're in luck, because Matt's going to press up another free, I believe, in the new year. So if you haven't got it already, keep that on your radar.
Hey yo, what's up? This is Chrome representing No Half Stepping, and you're checking out my man Specific on the Cold Crush.
Yeah.
Will I catch?
I get dizzy.
I get dizzy.
Tearing up the wax.
I get dizzy.
I get dizzy.
And take the crowd to the climax.
Simple.
Stop the violence and start the revolution.
Yeah.
Stop the violence by any means necessary.
Into the sounds of the Force.
Any means necessary.
Too many idiots in the game.
Featuring J-Man.
Who wish they could stop the violence with a flower. We're not living like that.
A track entitled Just Step.
Who wish they could stop the violence with a banner. We're not living like that either. If negativity comes with a 22, positivity comes with a 45.
45,
go,
man.
Go, 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 go.
Radio.
You cannot stop the violence with no flowers. It's time for the war of Armageddon. And they say Armageddon, where the righteous will rise up and beat down the wicked. Yeah,
beat down the wicked, man. Yo, as I look into the eyes of a cocksucking motherfucker, bum hugger, pucker your lips to kiss fist, bitch. Never like your music, always been a weak link. Bring it to me next man's argument, what is this? Who you got a problem with? Cause now it's me. You couldn't get your facts straight, you should have checked the story. Out before running up your gums, I sent out word to your mum to tell the truth for how our son is batty washing my thumbs and chatting shit. With your counterfeit hip hop list, you ain't hip hop, see draw drop when you state this. More like some RuPaul ish, cross dressing, so I'm guessing that your boyfriend called you crying, moaning, all upset with stressing. But the lesson you should learn is KJ's always get burned. Misrepresenting of our culture, acting all out of turn. So feel a firm kick to the chest. What did you really expect? For bringing to me that bullshit. Of course you do, we gon' step. Yep, yep, we gon' step. For running up your mouth, better quiet is kept. Cause you know I got to just step. Put you in your place, drop your head from your neck. Yeah, you know we got to just step. All ball droppers round and gets no respect. So you know we got to just step. Should have thought twice, pay the price and just step.
You're now fucking with the West, brother. The stress in my chest makes me wanna get your whole head broke up. But I bring peace, I'm a blessed brother. The fact is, I'm tired to seeing stress mothers. People are dying because they just like to break colours. We get pounds, we don't get dollars. A set of frowns from the I got the nouns of a tech scholar. A sketch proper, finger painting is your best offer. That's why you're the best blocker. Heard the verse, what a neck shocker. You heard me saying, come on, son, like Ed Lover. Jamar, you're the sis, I'm the best, On your couch, like a badge, you're not the step, brother. I leave threats under the ground. We bet he doesn't have a gun in his house. All he's got is a mumbling mouth. You're a bundle of doubt, who no one gives fuck all about. So stop running your mouth.
We gon' step, for running up your main get this kept, cause you know I got to. Just step, put you in your place, drop your head from your neck. Yeah, you know I got to, ha. Just step, all ball droppers running against no respect. So you know we got to, ha. Just step, should have thought twice, paid the price and just step. When it comes to all these pocket lineups, your vagina panty liners, I'ma find you right where you stand and demand an explanation to your wisdom tactics. Cat whack melodramatics for the static, so be a man as I plan to not be putting up with this much longer. We much stronger, be round longer, way before you knew what to do. See my crew be certified from the good old days, relevant in every way. We never sold us, so unlike you, so what to do is straight chin check. Show respect and surely if you have no rap and music that is subject to rules, then you will lose.
Who's the Force talking to?
Suckers, you know I do not need to sing no me because two colors are shown. You ought to be about money, yeah. Not this culture, in fact, it's best you go and play some house or pop that music, that's right. We all got families to feed, and if you really believe that gives you right for what you do, they need it more for you. True, yeah, we gon' step. For running up your mouth, better quiet is kept, cause you know I got to, ha. Just step, put you in your place, chop your head from your neck, yeah, you know I got to, ha. Just step.
Yeah, massive, massive shout out to my man, The Force.
You know we got to.
He is bringing it heavy in 2018, trust me.
Just
the guy is straight up relentless. So without any further ado, I think it's time we brought into the studio my man Junk from the incredible Second to None B-Boys.
The show that brings you the hits of the 20th century.
Cold Crush Radio.
So welcome to the Cold Crush Radio Show.
Thanks for having me.
DJ Junk. Is it Junk or just DJ Junk?
It can be either, actually, because Junk was what I used for graffiti.
Yeah.
Then when I started DJing, I just added the DJ bit, so people would know I'm a DJ, but...
All right, okay.
It can be either, yeah.
Okay, so Junk, B-boy, DJ, graph writer from the legendary Second to None crew. Welcome. I would like to ask, the first question I want to ask you, which I ask everybody, is where did it all begin for you?
14 years old, local disco, seeing some guy body popping, you know, doing an arm wave.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell's that? That looks really weird. Do that again. That was kind of my first encounter with body popping. I think then I heard Electro One about the same time.
Okay.
My brother had it and used to play it, and I was like, this music sounds really futuristic and different to anything I've heard. Was kind of hooked really from then, that point onwards, and that was sort of early 1984.
Is that an older brother?
Yeah, because he was kind of into like soul funk and electro and that kind of thing, so he was playing this Electro One, and I was like, oh wow, this is brilliant. So
you were in right at the front end of it, right at the very beginning of the Electro series.
That was the first one. So that was when they first started coming out, and I started getting them myself after that. And I started around about that time, I was buying 12 inches. I think I had Crazy Cuts and the Wild Style Time Zone at that time, and a few others, Newton Rockers, Classical Scratch, and the Rapologists as well.
So you managed to find those pretty cool. We're talking 1983, aren't we? We're talking
84, yeah.
Was Electro 184?
It's probably 83, but the first I come across it was early 1984.
Right, I've got you.
Now, it may have been early, I wouldn't know, but I've got good memory of dates, and it was 1984 I first come across that. But then Electro 2 was not long afterwards, and I was listening to that.
They came in pretty quick succession after that.
They did, literally a month apart. I remember, they were whacking them out at a heck of a pace back then. Literally, by the time it got to 85, it was up to sort of like... Electro 7, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think actually the first Electro that I got was Electro 6. It was quite amazing to miss 1 to 5.
Oh, they're brilliant. I love them all, you know. And each time I hear, because I've got them all now, and each time I play a new one, it reminds me of a certain time window, you know, of like Electro 1 is early 84, you know, like Electro 6 you mentioned, that's very early 85 I first heard that, you know, with Dougie Fresh on that, and love that, you know. Electro 7 is kind of like spring of 85. Electro 8 reminds me of summer. They've all got little time windows.
That's it.
I love them all, they're just brilliant.
So when you first saw the guy popping, did you go home and research it, or was it
I just started trying to do it myself. I stood in front of the mirror, sort of getting my arm in that kind of wave shape and just trying to pop it into different positions. Just started thinking, okay, I just practiced it and started trying to do the moonwalk, you know, that kind of stuff, body wave. And then I think a little, not long afterwards, I started then trying to like spin on my back. So it just started from there onwards, and it that's how it's been ever since.
That's amazing. And did you, when you first saw it, did you know it, how long did it take before you worked out that it was a part of this new culture called hip hop?
I kind of knew from hearing the music. I kind of knew that it was all interlinked.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was I did see in Flashdance. I saw it in 1983, which was just not long before. And I saw the scene in Central Park where they're doing the break-in, and it kind of went a bit over my head. Where I didn't quite understand what it was meant to be. I'd seen snippets of break-in earlier than that, but then once it's kind of like revealed to me, this is the whole thing.
Yeah.
Then it kind of understood it's all part of the same thing, really. And then I think my first awareness of graffiti was probably Beach Street, I think, maybe, or some of the stuff that I see on the record sleeves as well.
Yeah.
And I got quite into that quite quickly as well.
Yeah. So you've covered obviously quite a few elements within hip hop. Was it a natural progression from one to another, or was it all at the same time? I mean, because obviously you got into breaking. Did you focus on breaking, or did you break in and graph, or did you go from breaking to graph and so on?
I did them kind of concurrently, really. Yeah. So I was into breaking first. Very soon after that, I kind of got into graffiti.
Yeah.
But then I just did the two things, you know, at the same, not exactly at the same time, but you know, I would be into graffiti, breaking, and it went on like that. I was a graffiti artist and a breaker for years, really. Music and DJing, that came later.
Yeah.
That was kind of 88, really, started doing that stuff. But I never saw the thing of just doing one thing. I didn't see the point in that. It's like, well, you know, why not just do two things? Yeah.
The way I saw it was, because when breaking sort of came to this country, everyone was breaking, and then you worked out the music. And then a lot of people went from breaking into doing graph, and some people then left breaking and continued with the graph.
Yeah.
And others left breaking and went into production. So that's why I was asking about the sort of continuation. But obviously with yourself, you've focused on and stayed with them. Stayed with them, yeah.
I just didn't want to stop breaking.
No.
Even when it was considered out of fashion. To me, it's such a passion to break.
Yeah.
And I was probably addicted to it as well. And I thought to myself, why give it up? You know, and the other factor for me, it took me a lot of training to get good at breaking, because I was quite big. So I put a lot of work in to get good. So my thing was, well, why would I want to give up now? And I'm all, you know, and I spent so much hard work getting to this standard, I'm not going to give it up.
Yeah.
So I just carried on. And that was the point when breaking kind of died off in the UK.
Yeah.
But me and the other guys, we just carried on. We just cracked on with it. But in a way, we just got really fanatical. You know, it's like we were just doing it all the time.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, as well as yourselves, there were definitely pockets of people around the country
that
were still carrying on doing it.
There was a few people here and there.
Yeah.
It wasn't massive like it was, say, in the early 80s or mid 80s, but you had a few diehards. We were one of them, and there was other people about that just carried on.
So, obviously, with the elements that you've covered, from b-boying to graph to production and DJing, you've covered most of hip-hop, really. Have you tried rapping?
I've had a go, but do you know what? I don't think I've got the voice for it. I used to learn some of the words of some of my favourite rap songs and do them, and people are like, oh, shut up, you sound terrible. I think that, you know, I'm happy with what I've achieved. I think, you know, I don't think you can do everything. I just don't think I've got the voice.
No.
It's either singing or rapping, so I'll leave it at that. So
you've tried it. You have tried it.
I've had a go.
You tried it.
It'd be nice. You know, I'd love to be able to do it, but I just don't think anyone can do everything, you know?
No, for sure.
And I cover quite a few different things as it is.
Yeah,
really.
Certainly do.
I'll leave the rapping to somebody else.
So with all the things that you do, what do you think you'll be most remembered for?
Probably music, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a hard one, because, you know, I get a lot of praise on my graffiti.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not really a fully active graffiti artist. You know, I'm kind of really do it here and there.
Yeah.
You know, but I get loads of feedback. Oh, that's amazing, you know. But I think mainly it could be just the music that I've made, because I've made so much.
Yeah, sure.
I think that would be the thing that will be most remembered.
And it's the thing that will be still around, I guess.
Well, the thing is with music is it can live on forever.
Yeah.
That's the legacy that anyone who's made great music leaves when they're no longer here, is their music still survives. So I hope that one day, when in the future, people still remember my music. It'd be nice to know.
I'm a bit of a graffiti obsessive, and obviously I've researched a lot of your stuff. I've looked at it in detail. I can see where a lot of the early influences come from, and certainly the feels as well.
Yeah.
But your style, well, not really your style, but your execution is just perfection, almost perfection. Did you spend a lot of time honing those skills?
I think I did spend a lot of time doing it. I was very, very sort of fanatical at graffiti, but also I think I've got quite a lot of natural talent as well.
Yeah.
And I think with graffiti, is what makes a great graffiti artist is not just doing a lot of it, but it's also having a good natural ability.
Yeah.
And I've always been good at art, and my dad was a sign writer, so he was incredibly good at that kind of stuff. So I think I've inherited some of that natural ability.
Yeah.
And just found I was really good at whatever I touched, I was good at it, whether it's a spray can or a paintbrush or just drawing, anything, colouring in, just do it all really very easily.
Just looking at your letter styles, I mean, your letter styles are very of a time, but, and I wanted to ask you the question, who were you inspired by letter-wise? And I think I probably can answer that with the Crime Angels and people,
yeah, dead vibe.
And yeah, people like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you were probably around at a similar time to them, so pioneering that style and pushing those exactly fills,
yeah, yeah,
you know, as much as those guys were.
Well, I was, like you said, I was really amazed by Crime Angels stuff.
Yeah.
I loved their stuff, and that's what I idolised and wanted to aspire to be. You know, when I saw that spray can art in sort of like 87, I was thinking, that's the style that I want to do.
Yeah.
And I remember meeting Motu in Covent Garden about 86, 87, and he flipped for his piece book, and I think Tony was there as well, and we were just gobsmacked. We was like, oh my God, look at it. It's just masses and masses of it. It's incredible. But that was always my style. That was what I wanted to do. But of course, me doing it, it's going to have my own edge to it. But
yeah,
that was it. If there's a role model, it was their pride for lettering.
Yeah.
He was always like the man for letters, and that's what I kind of based my style on.
Mm.
And Mode for characters.
Yeah.
And I kind of base my characters on Mode's style, though I'm no up with him.
Yeah.
He is the master, but
yeah,
that was always like what I wanted to, and the way they use colours and the colouring in.
Yeah.
You know, that Crime Angels was always my thing.
I can definitely see that. Okie dokie. So on the graph front, obviously you spent a lot of your early years pursuing graffiti. Have you got any tales that you can say about? Are there any times where, you know, anything that blew you away, or any kind of escape stories, or meeting people, or anything that really stands out in your mind from your kind of your graph career as being, you know?
Trying to think. I was quite adventurous, I think, with my graffiti. I didn't do a lot of trains.
No.
And the simple reason was, it wasn't that I didn't have the bottle to do them. It was what they didn't stick around to be admired.
Sure.
So I was more into walls, but what I did used to love was doing train track walls.
Yeah.
So that you could go see them on the train. And one of my claims to fame is I daringly, much to everyone's amazement, did two pieces in the Bournemouth station, right in the station, I might add, not sort of halfway up the track and near the station, but right literally next to the ticket office.
Yeah.
And people were like, how the hell did you do that? Well, the simple thing was, is on Christmas Day, it all shut down. There's no one in there. And of course, in those days, there wouldn't be any CCTV. So I just went in there. I remember the first one, which was the Christmas in 1987.
Yeah.
And the piece said Graffiti 88. And I whitewashed a big square on a brick wall and did the piece the same night. And it was a massive piece. And everyone was like, oh my God, that is mental. And it was there for a year and a half. And it was like, it made me into a sort of local celebrity.
So they didn't buff it?
No, they did eventually. But it took them a year and a half to actually get around to doing that.
Is that because they liked it, do you think? Or?
I've no idea. Maybe they just procrastinated. I have no idea what their opinions of it were, but I did it very well, and it looked more like a commissioned mural than just a sort of scribble. And I wasn't into this like tagging everything else, because I knew that would bring trouble and made it look messy. So it was very neat, you know, that kind of thing. I got pictures of it, and it had a nice little mountain background. It's a Graffiti 88, and so that was there for a while. Now they did buff that, so Christmas 1990, I came back again and I did Graffiti 1991, and that lasted one day. I got photos of it though. That was actually.
I don't think I've seen that one. I've seen the first
one. Because it was only there for a day. Yeah, I've got pictures of it.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was a good piece, but it unfortunately didn't last. And added to that, I think I was kind of quite famous for doing some of the I was the first one to do the South Cut Road Industrial Business Park.
And that's still there.
One of the pieces is still there. That was there till recently because that was painted over just a few months ago.
Sadly enough.
But do you know what? It was there 28 years.
That's crazy.
It was done in 1990. Now, I did that off a ladder because my house is only around the corner from there.
Okay.
And I could take a ladder around there, and I did that Einstein, which was kind of about 20 feet up in the air off a ladder. Quite difficult to do that was, but people were like, how the hell did you do that? And because it was so high, that's the only reason it lasted, because no one could go over.
Well, no one went over, did they?
But I was the first one to do the lower wall, which in 88, me and Shane Bingham, I did a piece in colours in sort of tribute to the film that had just come out.
Oh, yeah.
And Shane Bingham did a thing called Style. And then in 89, I did the Back to the Old School, which was the sort of one that kind of really everyone noticed. But then eventually, over the next few months, I did the whole wall. So I did the Back to the Old School, then I did some other pieces that carried on all the way to the end of it, because it's quite a long wall, that is.
Yeah, it's a great wall. It's a real shame that it sort of ended, really.
Yeah, it is a shame. Is a great wall. Then again, people abused it, because in what happened in more latter years, other graffiti artists just started tagging everything. And what they tagged, not just the walls, but they tagged all the retail units that are opposite. And obviously, people aren't going to be happy. And then they just fenced it all off. So in a way, they've caused that demise by their own stupidity. Because one thing I didn't do is I wouldn't tag everything around the place.
No.
Because I knew that then it's going to cause trouble. If you kept a nice, neat piece, people would tolerate that, but as soon as you start scribbling on everything, and they did the bins, they did everything, and so therefore, well, what they're going to do, they're just going to stop people coming in. That's the end result. They've lost that now, that thing now. So there you go.
So back in the, I want to say early 90s, obviously you were still pursuing your b-boy dreams.
Of course,
other people were not does anymore. What made you the question how did you find what was going on in Europe? How did that all come about?
Me and Tony were in London. We used to go to London quite a lot at that time. It was 89, this was. We'd often used to go to record shopping. Sometimes we'd go to events, you know, odd time there'd be a jam in somewhere in Soho, Covent Garden, whatever. But anyway, we're there one day in the summer of 89, and this German guy comes up to us, and Tony's wearing like a Puma waterproof, and I think he might have trainers on. He goes, "Oh, are you guys breakers? You know?" He goes, "Yeah, we are." He goes, "Oh, I thought you were. You were in the Beach Street Puma." And then we started chatting, and that was Akin Walter, Zebster.
Oh, okay.
And he goes, "Oh, I'm a breaker too. I'm from Germany." And he goes, "Oh, really?" So we started chatting, and then we were just up the road from Charing Cross Tube station, so we went down there. So we went, "Well, let's go down and have a little throw down." So we went into the tube station, which is
like you do.
We used to do that a lot anyway, because we used to go there earlier on and sort of break either on our own, or sometimes with London guys would be there.
Yeah,
it's quite a good tour actually. So we went in there and we had a little jam session, and you know, he was pretty good. He did quite a nice windmill and stuff like that, and we did some head spins and everything. And he was like, "Bloody hell!" He goes, "You look, it's got some good head spins." He goes. So we kept in touch, and in those days, there's no internet.
I was going to say, how did you keep in touch? Was it letters or was it phone? Or
letters, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Phone calls were difficult because it was overseas, was really expensive.
Yeah.
Sometimes you could phone, but it was quite precarious to phone other countries in that time. It wasn't like today, the communication. People didn't know they're born with what they got today.
Yeah, you know it.
So what we had is we had his address, and he'd actually write a letter. People used to write letters in those days, and so you get, I think we had this letter in the post a few months later, because Tony goes, "Oh, that Akin guy's written a letter," and he had all this like tags in this letter, and like a little piece, and it's like, you know, he invited us to go to Munich in November 89 to this big jam that was taking place. So me, Nick and Tony, he said come and stay with him as well in Budenheim, which is kind of near, not far from Munich anyway.
Yeah.
It's near Mainz, and it's the first time we've actually been. It's the first time we've been in anything like that ever.
Yeah.
It was like real adventure. And
This is based off a letter, of course, as well, from a guy that you met once in London.
Exactly.
This is,
so,
so do you know what, to try and convince your friends that, oh, by the way, we're all going to Germany because this guy we met at the subway station.
Actually, they were like, Nick was dead up for it.
Yeah.
Because it's Me and Tony have initially met him, but then there was a bit of communication going on in that period of time between the summer and sort of November when we actually went. But Nick was right up for it. So yeah, there's no questions about that, because he said, well, we've got this jam and there's a breaking competition, and he's saying, well, because we were saying about, like, yeah, breaking's kind of died in the UK, which it had at that time, but he goes, no, it's big in Germany, there's loads of people doing it. So we were surprised that for some reason in Europe they hadn't given up like they had in England. I don't know why that was, but they just didn't. So anyway, we went to
do you think they hadn't given up, or do you think they were a little bit further behind us? Because I'll tell you what, I just want to ask your opinion on this. I remember when I got Spray Can Art.
Yeah,
you went through the whole of Spray Can Art, and there was good pieces from the UK, good pieces from from America. When you looked at the German ones, and this was 86, 87, something like that, there were copies of Scene and things like that. So it was almost like they were a few years behind. It felt like that for me.
I think what it was is when it comes to the art forms themselves, they certainly weren't behind. I mean, there were some amazing graffiti artists in Germany at that time. We saw Lumet.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, hip-hop culture and the breaking, there were some fantastic breakers.
Yeah.
What it was is they didn't have this fashion mentality that's somehow prevalent in England where, oh, no, we've now given up. We're now into the whatever the new thing was.
Sure.
New Jack Swing or Acid House or anything like that. They didn't have this kind of fad mentality with breaking.
In fact,
we even said to them, I said, well, in England, everyone's given up. And they said, what? They're given up? They couldn't understand. And that's how we thought, well, why give up something if you're into it?
Yeah,
it turns out a lot of people in England gave up because everyone else gave up and they were ostracized.
Well,
we weren't going to be succumb to that ostracization. It's like, you know, anyone would take the piss out of us, we just need to tell them to get lost, basically.
Well, it was an interesting time, wasn't it? Because, if you look at everything even before breaking, we're renowned for fads, so, you know, you had skateboarding, you had BMXing, yeah, and then you had breakdancing.
Even before breaking came around, you had like the New Romantics, you had Casuals, you had all these different youth fads would come out. You've had a revival of like mods and that in the early 80s, and like Rude Boys and Skinheads and all that kind of stuff was kind of cycling around, you know. Then you had Acid House come in later, you know, mid-80s you had the Casual thing, and then but we didn't look at breaking as a fad, you know. That was like a lifestyle thing, so we were going to stick with it. Everyone else knocked it on the head. A lot of people regretted knocking it on the head, you know, but, and I think, well, no one forced you to. You could have still carried
That's
on.
That's right.
We just had the thing, we were just going to carry on. And I think for us, also, we didn't really have anything else. And I remember being sort of in my teens, sort of 17, 18. All I did was break. I didn't do anything else. I didn't have a girlfriend. I didn't even have a job. I didn't really have any other interests. Breaking was it. Do you know what I mean? I didn't really go out drinking like a lot of other people would at that age.
Yeah.
Didn't have a car. It was just breaking. That's all I was into. And it's like, well, if I don't do this, what have I got? So I just carried on. Tony, Nick, Daryl, Asa, you know, we're all the same. We all just bang into it. But anyway, going back to Germany, I think they just didn't succumb to that whole fad crate thing. And, you know, they loved it. And it just carried on strong as anything. And also, I think with Germany, where you've got a bigger landmass, a bigger population, and I think also they had a lot more facilities for it as well, because we'd go to Germany in the 80s, we'd be quite envious of these sort of really nice, expensive youth clubs they had. They seemed to, the government seemed to, obviously got members, but Germany was very prosperous then.
Yeah.
But they had these fantastic youth clubs with lovely big dance rooms and shiny floors. And I remember our king goes, oh, yeah, we train here. I was like, you train here?
Yeah.
It's like, we dream of having a place like this. Do you know what I mean?
We used to dance in the high street.
Well, we'd literally be dancing in, you know, shopping arcades and getting kicked out of places. I mean, we used to use some youth clubs, but, you know, the people in charge would reluctantly let us in. Half the time we'd be getting thrown out and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So we felt they had a lot more going for them, but also the bigger scene as well, because there's more people into it. So, and also it's easy communication from the other countries, neighboring countries, so that people would come from France, from Switzerland, from Italy, you know, from Holland or Belgium, all the countries that are literally on a train right away.
Yeah.
So you get a jam happening in Germany, you'd have people coming from everywhere. Whereas that's not so easy in England, because you know, we're isolated, we're an island. So I think there's a few things in its favour, but the German scene was just thriving.
So from that first visit, were there any is there anyone else from the UK going out at that time, or
not really at that time? No, we were the only ones at this Munich jam.
Yeah.
We weren't aware of anyone else going out. Now, a little while later, some other people from the UK did go out, but that's a few years later.
Sure.
I know 92, there was some of Always Rocking Tufts guys went there also, but we were the kind of first to be going out from the UK for a year or two, you know.
Do you still stay in touch with the German guys?
Occasionally I might get an odd message through Facebook from one or two of them, you know, blasts from the past.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Storm not long ago. I saw Swift not long ago, because he judged one of the Dirty 30s events back in 2014, which I DJ'd at in Birmingham.
Did.
He was the judge. So, I've known them guys since 89. Akeem, haven't heard from him in a while, you know, but I used to have a lot of involvement with him, you know, sort of a little further back. So occasionally I hear bits and pieces, but a lot of those guys that were sort of going in the early 90s, a lot of them now are like in their 40s. Not all of them are still breaking.
No, sure.
Got 200. There's newer generations, younger generations that come up, and that's how it's carried on. So there's very few people, say, what we knew back in the days, that are still going.
Well, it's interesting, though. I do agree with you, but at the same time, the thing I find interesting about hip-hop is that the people like ourselves that got into it way back in the beginning have never given up. I mean, with so many people I know that are in their 40s, heading towards their 50s, that are still painting, still producing, still, you know. I mean, graffiti writers these days, if you did an average age of writers nowadays...
Getting older, I suppose.
It's unbelievable.
Well, the thing is with graffiti, it's like the DJ and the music. It's not something you're relying on a youthful body to be able to execute very well. I mean, if anything, you're going to get better with experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas breaking, it's very much like you're at an advantage when you're younger. It's as simple as that. You know, I know from experience. I had a lot more energy and I was a lot lighter when I was 20, 21, 22 than I am the age I am now.
Yeah.
So that's just the thing. It's a physical thing.
Mm.
Whereas, if anything, I think in a way my graffiti skills got better since then. I think my DJing skills got better and my production skills have certainly got better just from experience.
Well, I think it's amazing though, because if you go back to 83, 84 and told yourself then, oh, by the way, by the time you're in your late 40s...
I've never believed it.
No, that's right.
I often say this to myself. I say this to people. I said, look, if I'd have... You know, in the 80s, I've known that I'd still be breaking at 49. I'd be like, what? I wouldn't believe it. Because in those days, I didn't even think I'd be breaking much past my late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
I thought I'd probably do it a few years. Because you've got to remember that when you're that age, time seems a lot longer. Like a year seems a lot longer than
things are changing so quickly, aren't they?
Well, your perception of time changes as you get older. Because you've lived longer. So therefore, you know, a year doesn't seem so long as it does when you're 14. But I remember been 14 years old thinking the age of 19 was years and years away, and I'd never thought I'd still be breaking at that age. I thought I'd have a car, I'd be going out and living this sort of fancy life, but actually that didn't happen. I kind of got more and more into breaking. But actually I'm kind of glad it went that way, because you know, I'm really thankful that I spent my youth doing all that. I think it's a good thing to be into.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably like for yourself, it's almost everything that I've ever done or you've ever done, the people that you've met along the way, your experiences are all from this amazing culture.
It's my whole life, really, basically. Yeah. It's kind of come from it. It's but it's kind of shaped everything from then onwards. I think also, like, being into breaking and graffiti, because they're kind of quite disciplined, it's given me a kind of mentality where I'm very persistent with things.
Yeah.
And I realised that you can't do well with something overnight.
No.
It's never instant gratification. I very much got the mentality where I keep chipping away at something I want to do long term. And that's actually what's made me do well at things.
Yeah.
People ask me, you know, you're lucky, you do really well. I said, no, I'm not lucky, I just keep working at stuff. I just stick with it. If you're kind of fickle and you don't stick with anything, you don't get good at anything. So from baking, I realised, because baking was a thing you had to work at, basically. It took me kind of 3-4 years of solid practice to get anywhere. And it's taught me that, yeah, you can do well with something, even if it seems stacked against you. You've got to keep just keep going. And it taught me that from a young age. But I think a lot, you know, there's a lot of people today that if they didn't get the results in 5 minutes, they've kind of given up. And it's like, that ain't how life works. No. Whatever you choose to do, you've got to work at something to make it, to get a success out of it.
I totally agree. Do you still get as excited now about the music and about breaking and graph as you did back then?
In a way, yes. Do you know what? When we've gotten, like, take example, back in summer with the Bar Style event, and I get very excited about the music because I do the DJing, but also because I play the b-boy battles, I play all my own music as well. And running up to that, I'm very excited. I'm making stuff all the time. I'm sort of buzzing and kind of like, and it is kind of exciting still. Believe it or not, I still get that buzz. I think if I didn't, I wouldn't do it because there's no other reward in it. You know, I don't really make any money from it.
It's certainly no financial.
It's just something you do just for passion. And yeah, I do get excited about it. You know, it's fortunately so. So I think if I didn't, I probably wouldn't be doing it anymore.
No, that's right.
It's a pure labour of love, really.
So I've heard that you've got agents working for you.
Agents
uncovering breaks.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't. in order to get my huge collection of breaks, I can't do it all myself.
No,
I've got other people, mainly Daryl, really. Yeah. But I have actually.
Don't expose him.
Huh?
Don't expose him.
Well, anyway, no. The thing is I do the production.
Yeah.
Right. That's my thing. I'm not much of a digger. I find digging quite boring, actually. And I ain't got the time to do both. Daryl loves digging. And my deal is he gives me some breaks. You know, sometimes I get breaks off other people. I've had stuff off Prone. I've had stuff off Sire. You know, Russell from Gutter Snipes. I've had stuff off quite a few people over the years. But me being as anal as I am, I keep everything, right?
Yeah.
And as a result, I've got just the most massivest library of breaks imaginable. but that is what I use to do my music. And if you hear... You know, you hear my productions and there's loads of breaks on there. Like, probably people are thinking, what the hell are half of these breaks? You know? So that's the thing. I've been collecting breaks for a very long time.
I'm salivating thinking about how many drum breaks you've got. It must be unbelievable.
I've got thousands of breaks, basically. I do have stuff on vinyl because, buy some. Sometimes I buy my own stuff as well. But a lot of it is stored digitally, but you know, if you went from a library, you'd be screwing. But it's not just breaks; it's also other stuff because it's I don't just use breaks in my production. I use some good bass lines. I use little weird noises.
Yeah,
riffs,
of course.
All kinds of other stuff. But I just got a lot of it, and in fact, I've got so much I've not used it all. You know, that I could go on years and years without acquiring any more stuff, just using what I've already got, and still make loads of output.
I'm going to have a look at that sometime.
You'll be welcome to have a little look through.
So, over the years, you've done a lot of stuff. A huge, huge amount of stuff. And I've already asked you about memories that stood out, but in terms of just hip-hop in general, is there anything that over that time that stands out in your mind as being, that was the moment I knew that... This is one of the best things that I've done in my life.
Oh, yeah. I've always been no doubt about that. I've always loved the whole thing. I think what was interesting about our story, not just myself but the other guys, is because we're loyal to breaking and we're also very, very dedicated to it. When breaking started to come, things turned around in the mid-90s and we noticed, and we thought, hang on a minute, it's like breaking seems to be getting more popular in the UK. And we were going to events. We'd always been going to events, but we noticed there'd be like more breakers, or people would be respecting it more. We weren't getting the piss taken out of us anymore. We were getting like a lot of praise, and also we were really good. And then the events started happening, like the UK Championships, and we won that. We won that 2 years running. And then next thing, we're just doing loads of stuff. It's like the mid to late '90s was a frenzy of just like doing some really interesting things.
Do you think did the winning the champs actually sort of give you a bit of a springboard?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. It definitely exposed us, because before then we were just going to sort of jams, hip hop jams, sort of some quite underground stuff, and just breaking just off our own back.
Yeah.
But what the champs did is it kind of exposed us into the mainstream, where, I mean, we were getting TV bookings and club bookings, and we were on a few agents, and you know, we did all kinds of weird stuff. We did music videos, but I think a lot of that stemmed from that exposure. But we did other stuff as well. I remember me and Adam did Urban Games, and we did some other things. But all of that helped to kind of get us into an audience that wasn't strictly a hip hop audience.
Yeah,
you know. And then I remember we did like a lot of raves. In the late 90s, we did all the Dreamscapes. We used to do some weird and wonderful events. We used to dance with the Cut Up Boys, doing all their sort of house gigs, and, you know, so many different types of events we used to get booked for, festivals, and I did some little stunt double stuff. I mean, I was on some quite big TV shows as well. I was stunt double for Vic Reeves and Mortimer. I was in Shirley Bassey's music video. Quite a few things like that.
Adverts.
Yeah, I was in Daily Star advert. Record breakers. There's actually a whole list of stuff. And it's funny thing is when I tell people like different things I've been in, one, they're either completely astounded or they just think I'm talking bollocks. So, but then again, if anyone's a bit doubtful, I can YouTube a lot of the stuff. I even did a Crime Watch spoof where I was dressed up as a policeman doing break-in at the end of Crime
Watch.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
Loads of weird stuff. But we all did, you know, we did Top of the Pops. It was on Generation Game.
Yeah.
And, you know, all that stuff, because that went on for quite a while, you know, where all those gigs we were doing.
Did you have an agent at the time?
We did, actually. Yeah, we had a Profile. They were kind of like a DJ agency in London. And they had some quite big DJs like Scratch Perverts, Norman Cook, and some big rave DJs like Groove Ride and people like that on their books. But they took us on as well. And I guess the way they looked at it is, well, they can get us gigs. It's all more commissions.
Absolutely.
For them. But they actually did get us a lot of gigs. I mean, we were doing some quite mad stuff. I mean, we did some big festivals. We did Santa Pod Bug Jam, and we did all this other stuff.
Quite unique, I would think, at the time.
It was, yeah, because it's like, at that time, breaking was getting a bit more trendy. You had the Jason Niven's video come out in 98, and it was kind of exposing it in a new way, where it's not the cheesy thing from the 80s. You know, it's got now to a really high-level art form, and it was exposing us, these are the UK champions, you know, that was how we were billed as. And we were just absolutely inundated. I remember at 88, sort of 98, 99, we'd be doing six gigs a week. I remember one week in that late 98, we did six gigs, and we back to back, where we actually just went from one gig to another, to another, to another, and we stayed over. I remember we once went to Wales, then we went to Cambridge, then we flew to France the next day, and we'd already done in the week like four other gigs and a music video. It's mad. It was just
it's almost like probably what happened to the Rocksteady crew after the...
Probably, it was like a similar thing. I mean, I've no idea exactly what happened to them, but I get the idea they're probably invaded. You get the rough of the smooth, you get some stuff that's a bit of a farce and a bit of a joke, and this bit disappointing maybe, but you, at the same time as that, you get some really good stuff, you know, and that's part of the game of doing a lot of stuff. And that's how it went on for quite a while. So I was sort of a professional b-boy, as it were. In fact, we all were, really.
That's crazy,
and it was very exciting as well.
I'm going to wrap this up. So what's next? I mean, for the man that's done it all, pretty much. So what's next for you?
I'm still breaking. Yeah, I won't give that up. But I'm doing a lot of DJing, a lot of music production, and doing it in different scenes as well. Because I don't just do the b-boy stuff. I'm doing a lot of rave DJing as well. I'm doing quite a few things with that, and I'm also now doing disco edits and remixes. Got some exciting things going on in all of those things, really. So I'm just trying to get all that stuff going as best I can, really. It's tricky today because there's so many producers and DJs.
For sure.
It's like there's so much competition, but you know, I'm very persistent and I'm starting to get stuff noticed, you know, and it's like, just keep going with it, really. But at the end of the day, I love it, so I'm never going to knock it on the head, even if I'm not getting anything else out of it.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here today.
Thank you.
And I'm going to hand the turntables over to you for half an hour and for the listeners to check out some of the breaks that you've collected over the years. So, yeah, thank you. Thanks again.
Thank you.
your boys who like to make noise, who make some fuck. We'll be right back.
Ask your friends to earn a place. Come on.
FM, the original hybrid.
like to say a very, very special thank you to my man Junk for coming into the studio tonight and dropping some knowledge on us, playing 30 minutes of straight up B-boy funk. I'm sure you'll agree it's been an incredible journey. I'm going to leave you with two more tracks this evening, and I'll catch you again next week at Friday 8:30 through till 10 on tracksfm.org. If you just joined us, you're listening to the Cold Crush Radio Show. I want to see a dance to my dangerous feet. Everybody,
free. 50,000 watts of funkin' hip-hop power.
The Night of the Living Legend.
Specific.
Man, machine, and music in full effect.
Oh, it's so boring.
Cold Crush.
Straight into the flip side of the brand new 7-inch by Deja One.
Righteous in the brain like House of Fame, jumping up all the way, the sky's great. Ain't no limit to this space we're gonna make.
Let me create this really quick, shape it up in a millisecond. These beggars are seen, just suckers forgot how to really rap. I guess it's up to hell of lab, to show up with the rhythm that's every fresh memory that every night will be the act. With skills off the par, you won't spar, but won't last long. Don't spar, stand strong when we perform. Sing songs, sort of with the strength to sing King Kong.
So speak hard,
when you go on and get your wings split off.
Come on, hit him with my reflex, so give me the beat back. Vibe is going too fast, so where the fuck's the weed at? If it might not work, I think I just go with the flow. We're rocking and stopping about many people until the whole gravel explodes.
I summon another hand banging, like give me some moment jam. I feel like if you just mention me on the mission, I'll let all you be by my snow. Blast off until the shadows fade, but just you run it. Read your baddest in here, and it can be done, done. We represent and make it wild like one. You're not gonna throw your black hat hat on. This is bigger, we'll kill the whole crew. The war, war, all the war for your hip-hop hands is up on. Represent and make it wild like one. You're not gonna throw your black hat hat on. This is bigger, we'll kill the whole crew. The war, war, so pick up the rock and let it burn down. See, yo, I need to share this in the cut. I'ma be kicking about a cup, and I touch that tons of rhymes. I'm here to make it a cry like all your phones. Tell them that this music's in the phone. Your mind, I'm on it, bigger than bomb. A maniac on the track, back with bundles of steps. But a wild ass shit to make the roof collapse. So y'all, I'ma be giving the rhythm that's better than begging the head of the bump, 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 bump. I'm trying to tell the boogity, beady, be begging the mother, the middle, be bust up.
Man, again. See, every time you do this shit, the power shuts down, man. What am I supposed to do now?
But it's not my fault.
Fix it, man. I mean, put me back on.
Share this, don't compare this to your average. You make it vanish, you understand it's a dime ass. Come with me, see how fast you can run. Cause we generous on the microphone, select the number and I'm live. I'm in charge with arms like an actual large. Ain't no this in front of my face and I will rip your ass apart. Cause ain't no question about who's a man in charge. I'm ripping this shit apart, I hit him hard. When in the hill is my fault.
You give me your moment, I'm making the back of where you left off. Open the biblical can of hope as you grab, let's get what you're in for.
I'm trying to get involved in fact, go make yourself useful. Break down the door so we can settle the score.
You want more, y'all?
So lots of amazing stuff coming up as we head towards Christmas. I've got a very, very special Christmas show in store for you. Next week, we see the return of Whirlwind D and the Pioneers Takeover. I want to give a massive shout out to everybody that's locked in this evening. Absolute pleasure, as always, having you on board. And of course, a very, very special thank you to my man Junk for joining me. I'm going to leave you with one more track. This one's by Apathy.
Alchemy is a spiritual art, a divine secret science.
I pulled the sword from the stone, sat down on my throne, meditating like a monk in the zone. From my DNA strands locked deep in my bones, I extract on the track, make a million app clones. They got the earth under their spell with smartphones, hypnotized in a trance, a society of ants. No chance to advance, was raised on food stamps. I'm a government cheese baby with hand-me-down pants. Fall deep into the spell, take a seat, this is hell. People who remain asleep can't rebel. Listen to the voice when you hear a ringing bell. Go to the village square, throw poison in the well. Fluoridation, radio station, radiation. Radios transmit poison to the nation. Stupid motherfuckers think just cause I'm a mason that I'm Illuminati or something to do with Satan. Your brain's been infected, a broke skipping record. Y'all are just sheep who follow a different shepherd. Watch what you read, it was written by a man. I be spitting certain shit only few could understand. Like knowledge of the Gnostics, Manly P. Hall. I in the center cause my family see all. At 33, Jesus turned water into wine. 33 degrees, 33 vertebrae in the spine. I'm Mecca, Kabbalistic science from the future. Built the pyramids with a deity's computer. Back on the block with the thieves and the lepers. Load max and set it off on tax collectors. Sneak under the fences and off-limit sectors. Stick up the kings for their nice gold scepters. Hood shit, everybody smoking on that good shit. Pagan rituals around the fire keep the woods lit.
Asian philosophy and science derived a great deal of symbolical knowledge and insight from the study of the human body.